As we heard a few minutes ago from NPR congressional correspondent David Wellner, the new Homestead Act may be a long way from passage. Some small towns in the Great Plains aren't waiting for Washington. That's especially true in Nebraska, where some of the first homesteads were claimed. NPR's Howard Berkus reports.
Just outside Beatrice, Nebraska, at a patch of prairie surrounded by homes and farms, National Park historian Todd Arrington approaches the site of one of the earliest homesteads.
This is the site of the first home that Daniel Freeman built on his property. Freeman was widely considered to be one of the very first homesteaders. He filed his homestead claim on the very first day that the act was in effect, which was January 1st of 1863.
The building itself is long gone, but Daniel Freeman succeeded while most homesteaders did not. They blamed blizzards, tornadoes, drought, isolation, inexperience, or the simple fact that many homesteads were too small for successful farming. Still, homesteading spawned towns dependent on the farmers and ranchers who stayed. Half the nation lived and worked on farms when homesteading began.
A lot of people that grew up on farms or grew up on family homesteads are not involved in agriculture now. They've left to go to college and, you know, they never come back because the jobs that they're interested in taking are elsewhere. You know, there's no question that the Homestead Act brought people here, but it's not here to keep them here in these areas anymore.
Farming itself changed. Farms are far bigger now, requiring fewer farmers to run them. That means fewer people in rural towns to shop, pay taxes, and send their kids to school. In fact, just 2% of the nation now lives and works on farms.
It's a very, very difficult situation for these communities. And without some changes, without some intervention, I should say, it's going to continue.
Ernie Goss is an economist at Creighton University in Omaha. The intervention is awaiting action in Congress. It's a new act proposing a new era of homesteading, and it would apply to 700 rural counties, which have lost at least 10% of their population since 1980.
And the question for a new Homestead Act would be, well, what industries will be successful? Because, again, the agricultural sector and agricultural industries and those industries related to agriculture just really is not a growth industry.
The new Homestead Act focuses on small businesses, entrepreneurs, and young people abandoning hometowns. It's rural renewal, and it's about time, says Chuck Hassebrook of the Center for Rural Affairs in Walt Hill, Nebraska.
So much of what's been done in economic development policy has embodied a bias toward bigness and corporate enterprise. And that corporate job creation strategy did create jobs in the metropolitan centers, but it's been a dismal failure in the farm and ranch communities. Let's also create economic policies that work in rural America.
Hassebrook points to the center of Nebraska, to an island of buildings and people, in a sea of hay bales, crops, and grazing cows, to a town he says demonstrates the promise of rural revival.
We're in Ord, Nebraska, approaching downtown, and my name is Beth Ann Coons with Valley County Economic Development.
And my name is Bob Stoll. I'm an attorney here in town, and I've been active on the Economic Development Board.
Beth Ann Coons and Bob Stoll proudly show off downtown Ord, with its classic town square, grassy and shaded, adjacent to the county courthouse. Ord is 60 miles from the nearest traffic light, freeway, or Walmart. Its 2,200 citizens are losing neighbors, 16% of the county population in the last 20 years. Those are people who used to shop in Ord, catch a movie at the theater, see doctors and dentists, gas up their cars, and fill their stomachs.
In probably 25 to 27 of the years I've lived in Ord, Nebraska, most of the mindset was, what happens, happens. You can't do anything to change it anyway.
Traditionally, that's what we were always told. That's what I was told. You know, there's nothing to do here. You might as well go off to college and work somewhere else. But I think now there are opportunities here for them to come back and create their own income.
One example is just across the street at the Good Life Pharmacy, which has the typical drug counter, knickknacks, and candy upstairs, but a state-of-the-art pharmaceutical laboratory downstairs. Pharmacy technician Corrine Dawson measures tiny piles of powdered drugs on an electronic balance. She's compounding drugs, customizing combinations and dosages for patients who can't get what they need from pre-produced pharmaceuticals. compounding expanded the pharmacy's market from tiny Ord to the entire state, and it tripled the workforce to 6 pharmacists and 21 clerks and technicians. Angie Sabota is the clinical pharmacist who brought compounding to Ord so she could raise her family in her hometown.
Typically, you're going to find compounding pharmacists in more urban areas because it is a specialized service that we're offering. But we chose to do this in a small town. We all like living in a small town. We cater to the small town doctors that have patients that are hard to treat and they're looking for help. And we found a little niche service in this small town.
There's another example just down the street, in a large white house on a shaded corner lot. There, Dave Glaubke operates a seafood distribution business from a desk, computer, fax machine, and phone, 1,500 miles from seaports and clients.
I deal in seafood, but it's sale of seafood, where I call up a company, say, you ship it to so-and-so, and they give me a commission. See? It's really something you can do anyplace. I can do it out of a car. You can be anywhere in the world.
Glaubke does it from Ord because that's where his wife Nancy grew up. The couple's hectic and crowded urban life in Portland, Oregon prompted the move to Ord, where Nancy works as the county planner.
It's sure been nice to see other young couples move back with their children and have more and more kids on their bikes and see more and more at the pool and at the park. And that's nice because you don't want it to just turn into an aging population and then disappear. And I think if you can do that, if you can provide a good place for people to come back to, I think more and more people like us will come back.
Here's one more example, a block from the courthouse in a one-story office building with a cavernous room at its center. From this call center in Ord, cable television subscribers all over the country get service and sales calls. Dozens of farmers, ranchers, their spouses, and college and high school students chat into headsets while gazing at computer screens. The center moved from Omaha to Ord 2 years ago with more than 70 jobs because it needed more reliable workers, says Human Resources Director Cheryl Pignotti.
We had the work to do, but we couldn't find the steady, stable employees. And here in Ord, you do find that the employees, they are committed to their job. Our tenure has increased since we came to Ord. It's a better type of employee that comes in to work here for us.
Ord gets and keeps businesses like these because of an aggressive economic development effort. It convinced the region's telephone company to provide 56 T1 lines, super fast internet access. It wrangled $750,000 in city, state, and private incentives for the call center. It convinced more than 70% of the voters to tax themselves for economic development. It matches retiring business owners with young prospective buyers. It's writing to every Ord High School graduate in the last 40 years, urging them home, noting business, retirement, and investment opportunities. Chuck Hassebrook of the Center for Rural Affairs is impressed.
I think what's exciting about Ord is that there's emerging local leadership that's really prepared to take the bull by the horns and create a future for itself. Successful community revitalization can't happen without effective local leadership. That really is a key.
There's still net population loss in Ord. The town's economic development goal is net gain in the next census. Ord might make it because it's a regional center for government, banking, shopping, entertainment, and healthcare, despite its relative isolation and small size. Many towns don't have that to build on. Still, Ord is far from alone, says John Allen, a rural sociologist at the University of Nebraska.
When I look out across rural Nebraska and the Great Plains, I see it happening all the time. So it isn't that it can't happen. The question is, how do we stimulate that at a level that it happens in more than just those anecdotal places across the Great Plains?
The new Homestead Act would institutionalize the kind of incentives that seem to be working in Ord and spread them to the 700 counties losing population. But will that do any better than the original Homestead Act, which had a failure rate of 60%? Creighton University economist Ernie Goss isn't sure.
You can always ratchet up the subsidies to have businesses that will move there. You can ratchet up the subsidies so individuals will move there. The question is, what happens when the subsidies end? That's the real question.
Goss says businesses today are footloose, picking up and moving on when markets change, costs change, or better subsidies are offered elsewhere. The same is true, he says, for entrepreneurs, especially newcomers, who may tire of small-town life or outgrow the local labor market.
Those individuals that live there now are committed to that community, and they will, in many cases, be successful. But this Homestead Act, you're bringing individuals there who may or may not be committed to that area. And so I'm not certain that sort of approach will work.
And should all Americans pay to bolster dying small towns, places people are leaving, because agriculture has changed, the economy has changed, the world has changed, or they simply want to move on? Chuck Hassebrook of the Center for Rural Affairs says there's this risk in saying no.
That these communities become dying repositories of the poor and aged, and that people who can get out, but that the people left behind, the elderly and the poor, sink deeper and deeper into poverty and decline and despair.
This isn't just about rural people and places. This really is about what do we want the future of the United States to look like.
Rural sociologist John Allen.
Do we want population distributed across the landscape? And to me, I think that's the question, is whether or not people will step forward and said, yes, that has value, or no, the system's already too far in another way, and this is a part of another era. And that's a political question, and I can't answer how that'll turn out.
Back outside Beatrice, Nebraska, at Homestead National Monument, an inscribed headstone marks the grave of homesteader Daniel Freeman. He succeeded where others failed because he had good farmland and a sense for business. He planted orchards, bought more land, traded horses, built homes, and served as sheriff, coroner, and justice of the peace. A true pioneer, the gravestone says. It's up to Congress now to decide whether and how to attempt new homestead legacies in a modern era. Howard Berkus, NPR News.
To learn more about the new Homestead Act and to see photos of Orton, Nebraska, please visit our website at npr.org.